Robot or not?
Robot or not?
Lister Cole wrote in, and a few other people did, but I think Lister Cole may have been first, to ask, John, what is a sport and what is not? I'm reminded of the deli I worked in a couple of summers when I was in college in my hometown, which was run by a Hungarian couple. And on the radio that played in the deli, there was something about the baseball All-Star game. And the cranky Hungarian fellow who ran the deli turned to me and said, "Baseball is not sport, is game." And it just dripped with kind of disgust of like, it's just a game. And I tried to get him to explain it. It's like, well, they're not really athletic. They just run from place to place. It's like a board game with people. He had lots of thoughts. But as I started to take this apart, I really started to wonder, like, what makes something a sport and what makes it not a sport? And like, the Olympics frequently comes up. Like, well, if it's in the Olympics, it's a sport. I'm not sure that's accurate or not. There was a movement to have chess listed in or in the Olympics, but that's a board game. That doesn't seem like a sport to me. Are people who play video games while people watch, is that a sport? What makes something a sport?
Do you want me to tackle baseball, or is there some specific thing?
Sure, we can start. Maybe we can learn some things from the principle of baseball, if it's a sport.
Yeah, so baseball is clearly a sport because it's competitive, and you are using your body to accomplish a goal within a set of rules. Unlike chess, where the body part of it, like the moving the pieces, is not part of the game. Like there is no part of the moving of the pieces that is athletic in any way. In fact, you could imagine a chess game, for example, against a computer, where the computer doesn't have to move the chess pieces. It just needs to indicate where it wants to move. Like,
now, there is great mental exertion, and chess players are often exhausted, but it's not physical exertion.
Right, right. So sports can't just be mental. All right, so chess is a good example of a game because kinematic part of it, the body control part of it is not part of it at all. Baseball, so clearly, like every part of it is you know, you just, even if it's just like, oh, you're just running to the bases, like running is a sport just right. In itself. That's after not even considering like hitting the ball and pitching the ball and fielding, and like totally a sport. It's sport in any way. Now, you could say that is a sport where people who are out of shape can still be successful, and I would agree with that, but it doesn't make it not a sport. I mean, bowling's a sport, and plenty of out of shape people play. Like, there's no. Some people might think if you're not, completely physically fit, very strong, great stamina, cardiovascular health, that if you don't have to be like that to play at the highest level, that it's not a sport. And I think that's ridiculous. That's usually one of the complaints they make against baseball. So
now Mr. Fenyo, TMR Fenyo, rest in peace. He passed away a few years ago. He used soccer as the argument, and I can see why he was running down baseball by using soccer, because to play at a high level in soccer, you are running all the time. You cannot be a guy with a big gut. You can't be like Cecil Fielder, who was a fat guy, basically, or even like Terry Forster, who was a relief pitcher for the Atlanta Braves back in the day. And David Letterman referred to him as a fat tub of goo. He's a fat guy. He was a talented athlete, but he was also a fat guy. John Kruk, a fat guy. There are fat guys who play baseball. And his argument was you'd never see those guys in soccer. And he's right. You would never see them in soccer. But that it's a different. It's a different sport. And I would point out, since he was Hungarian, probably also considered water polo, because I believe it's the national sport of Hungary, water polo. And those people have to swim and play a sport for a long period of time. They are in fantastic shape. So there's a spectrum of athletics, I guess, and sport playing. And baseball maybe is down on the spectrum a little bit from soccer or water polo.
You would never see any of those soccer players playing basketball at the top level either, because they're all not tall enough.
That's true. That's true, because it's a different sport. So here's the other question that came up with my family talking about this. So what about dancing? Like, it's not competitive, but it's athletic. Is that a sport? Or my daughter is also a cheerleader, which is similarly athletic, but they don't compete against anybody. So what are things like that? Would we call those sports, or are they some other physical activity?
Dance is not a sport, and cheerleading is not a sport, but you can sportify them. But remember I said before, you know, within a set of rules, you can sportify them by making a bunch of rules. So like ice dancing or figure skating or whatever, where
or those, agree or those upon, cheerleading, like cheerleading competitions.
Right, right. Where you have certain moves are understood to be more difficult or worth a certain amount of points. And you have a certain number of things that you have to do. And there's criteria by which you are judged. This is where people get fuzzy. They're like, oh, ice skating is not really a sport because you have judges and there shouldn't be judges like that. But it's pretty rigid, you know, or even like diving where they know what this move should look like. And there right. is always a special category of like for artistic flair or whatever. Like they split up the scores into like the technical and the whatever scores. Like it gets fuzzy. But still, once you add those parameters, it becomes a sport because the people who are doing that are not just like, I'm going to express myself through my art. They are trying to accomplish athletic feats within a framework, within a very well-known framework. Like, they're not guessing about it. Boy, I wonder what this routine will score if I do well. Like,
right.
It is very exacting. Same thing with diving and stuff. Like, they know what they have to do with their bodies to get good scores. And it's not like they're just, I'm just going to do some crazy thing and wave my arms in the air. Maybe they'll give me a good score. No. So they've taken something that could be non-competitive, just dancing because it's fun and it feels good. And you know, you can, you know, do dance moves that are taught to you in exactly the way that they are taught or whatever. But they've made it into a sport by finding a way to score it, essentially.
That makes sense. And besides which, so many sports have officials that have to make judgment calls that affect the outcome. It's a little different to have an artistic score, yep. but it is within, ideally, it within such a tight rubric, a tight scoring system that although there's judgment to be had there, everybody knows what the rules are and how they're being judged. And when I'm always amazed in the Olympics when somebody does like a jump during an ice figure skating routine and the announcers immediately are like, oh, they didn't do this, that's going to be a 2/10 deduction. It's like, I couldn't even see it, but like they can see it, the skaters know it, the judges know it, everybody knows what the rules are.
And the artistic portion, like, it really does give you a lot of leeway. But the closest analogy in other sports are places where the officials have to make a judgment call, not about a particular play or event, but just in terms of enforcement of the rules. You see a lot of this in tennis. So people get angry, like, why are you calling a foot fault on me now when for the whole rest of the match, surely we were all foot faulting like 0.03% of the time. And it's not a single call the whole match. And on this critical point, in this particular juncture, you call a foot fault on me, it makes you angry. Taking time between points. There are rules about how long you can take between points. Sometimes, you know, the umpire will just let them take longer. If it becomes a habit, the other person can be angry about it. But like those type of judgment calls, I'm sure there are similar judgment calls in baseball, not on a particular play, but just in terms of how the rules are enforced or how sure. picky you are about balking or something, depending on what's going on. And, you know, like that is as close as you can get to kind of the artistic thing, where the artistic thing gives the humans leeway to try to push the score in one direction or another. And these rules that basically can't be enforced 100% of the time just due to the limits of humanity and tradition of the sport also give the umpires leeway to officiate the game in a way that they feel is fair and not the way like a machine would officiate it. If every single rule was enforced 100% of the time to the best of the acuity of an amazing set of machines, it would change a lot of sports.
Balking is a good example where you could probably call it a lot and they only call it, I think they everybody's got a judgment call, but it's sort of when it's egregious. And it is, I think, in the rules, in fact, and this is when a pitcher is basically the way to describe it for people who don't understand baseball. The rule is if a pitcher is using his movement on the mound to deceive the base runners in order to basically trick the base runners into thinking that they're pitching the ball when they're actually going to fake pitching the ball and throw it and try to get the base runner out on base. That's not allowed. And there are some specific rules, but it is also kind of a judgment call by the umpire to be like, that was an attempt to deceive and they failed to do this thing. What's funny, though, is that they just changed the rule on stolen bases to make it that they have video review. And the video reviews are more accurate in the sense that now people, if they touch before the ball gets there, they're safe. And if their hand comes off even momentarily while the ball is being held against their body, they're out. But there used to be this idea, and I certainly understood it, that a runner was like morally out or morally safe. Like the ball was there so far before they slid in, and I don't know if they actually got the tag on in time, but really he should have done a better job and he should be out, or vice versa. And the funny thing about adding in the replay is that that sort of judgment, which is like, yeah, you're probably out, is gone. And now it's like, were you out for a 30th of a second when the camera was on you? And it's just different.
So the balking thing, you don't have to worry about that until they can read the mind of the pitcher.
Exactly.
Intent to deceive is an interesting thing to write into the rules. Yeah. It's like, okay, umpire, read my thoughts.
Yeah, we'll get a functional MRI in every baseball cap.
Right. You don't know if I was trying to deceive the runner. Oh, baseball.
So that brings us back to esports, only because I could make an argument that playing video games is in, at least in part, about people having remarkable reflexes and hand-eye coordination, but is that enough to make that a sport?
Indeed it is. They are using their body to accomplish a goal within a defined set of rules. Just because the parts of their body they're using are limited, that's true of a lot of sports, but it is just as demanding as any other sport in terms of what does it take to compete at the highest level.
All right.
It just so happens that it's all happening in your hands and arms. And who knows, that may expand as like VR games come out and goes into. But same thing with bowling. It's like, oh, you're just using your hands to throw the ball and your feet to like, but at least I'm moving. I'm not sitting in a chair.
Darts is, and archery is the serious answer. Biathlon, I suppose. Darts is a frivolous answer, but I think it's the same point, which is there is skill involved because you have to have an accurate throw. You may be a fat guy who's drinking beer at the local pub.
You could do darts from a chair.
But if you can hit a bullseye every time, you are going to be a world champion darts player, and you are unique. You are a very special person with special physical skills at that point.
Do you want to get the bullseye, or do you want to get that triple thing?
I don't know anything about darts. Do you know they put darts on TV in the UK?
Yeah, why not?
I don't know.
Riveting.
And snooker, which is like pool, but there's
no
stuff
holes,
in the
right?
way.
Yeah.
There's stuff in the way. I don't understand it. All right.
Yeah. So anyway, on the sports thing, I think what it turns out is that my definition of sports is pretty darn broad. If you're using your body to accomplish a goal within a set of rules in a competitive way, it's a sport.
It's a sport.
And the brain doesn't count as part of the body in this definition.
All right. Yeah, baseball's a sport. And so is Halo.
Well, it's not the brain doesn't count, because that's the wrong way to put it, because the brain is controlling the body. Like I said with chess, if you can take the physical part out of it and no one says that you're not playing anymore, like in the same way that no one says the computer's not really playing chess because it didn't move the pieces, nobody says that about computers playing chess. It's understood that the movement of the pieces is not part of the what's important in the thing. Whereas if you had a computer playing darts and it just said, I would like to hit the bullseye, but never actually threw anything, you'd say, oh, you're not playing darts.
I have a good example here, which is curling, which is a sport, because we already said bowling was a sport. And I love curling. And one of the reasons I like curling is because, and many sports are like this, it is a strategy sport. I believe curling would be very hard to play if you had complete physical control. Because there's the strategy of placing the rocks closest to the center and being the last one. And there's a lot of strategy of like, how do you block shots and how do you set up? Because you want to be the last one closest to the center. Plus, it's actually quite difficult to have that amount of control over the rocks. Even at the highest levels, you make mistakes and things go awry. And or bocce would be another example of that. There's strategy and physical control. And even if you took the physical control out of it, I think it would be hard. It would be a game at that point and not a sport. But I think it would still be hard. And I'm fascinated by that, there is, like, even something like tennis is a good example. And all sports have this to a certain degree. Like, if you are able to hit the ball to hit a 115-mile-an-hour serve, you know what? You're going to get a lot of aces. But there are players who don't hit the ball the hardest who win because they have such great presence in terms of strategy of where to hit the ball and when to hit the ball with a certain spin or with a certain velocity. And how those things go together, I think, makes a great sport.
Women's second serves are 115. Jason, you haven't been watching
tennis. I have been, but I haven't been. I put my radar
Serena
gun away.
Williams serving like 130-something.
Yeah,
so.
I didn't want to overstate it. I didn't want to make a Sid Finch situation. That's a deep cut. People can look it up.
Robot or not.